introduced me to you.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Japanese researchers have developed electric chopsticks that enhance the salty taste of foods. The devices could help people who need to reduce their intake of sodium. The chopsticks were developed by Meiji University professor Home Miyashita and drink manufacturer Kirin Holdings Company. Wiring connects the chopsticks to a small computer device attached to the eater's hand. A weak electrical current transports sodium ions from food through the chopsticks to the mouth, said Miyashita. As a result, the salty taste enhances 1.5 times, he said. Miyashita and his research team have explored different ways that technology can interact with human senses. He has also developed a television screen that a person can lick to taste different food flavors. The traditional diet in Japan is salty. The average Japanese adult eats about 10 grams of salt each day. That is 2 times the amount suggested by the World Health Organization. High sodium intake is linked to increased cases of high blood pressure, strokes, and other conditions. To prevent these diseases, we need to reduce the amount of salt we take, said Kirin researcher Ai Sato. Sato added that if Japanese people try to reduce salt intake in the usual ways, they will need to cut many of their favorite foods from their diet. Otherwise, she said, they would have to eat bland or flavorless food. Miyashita and Kirin are improving their chopsticks and hope to have them ready to sell as early as next year.
Russian President Vladimir Putin claimed victory in the battle for Mariupol on Thursday, but he has ordered his troops not to attack the large steel factory containing the last Ukrainian fighters in the city. Instead, he told his forces to surround the Azovstal factory so that not even a fly comes through. Russian troops have attacked the southeastern port city of Mariupol since the early days of the war. The city is largely destroyed. Top officials have claimed it was about to fall, but Ukrainian forces continued to fight. In recent weeks, a few thousand Ukrainian soldiers were in the factory's tunnels and bunkers. Russian forces continued to bomb the site and demanded that they surrender. But on Thursday, Putin declared victory without taking the factory. The completion of combat work to liberate Mariupol is a success, he said in an appearance with his defense minister. Congratulations. Ukraine denied that there is a Russian victory in Mariupol. This situation means the following. They cannot physically capture Azovstal. They have understood this. They suffered huge losses there, said Oleksiy Arestovych. He is an advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. By calling the mission a success, Putin may be seeking to take the attention off the plant. The factory has become a worldwide symbol of resistance. Even without the plant, the Russians appear to have control of the rest of the city and its port. The capture of Mariupol would be the Kremlin's biggest victory in the war in Ukraine. It would help Russia secure more of the coastline and provide land access between Russia and the Crimean Peninsula, which Russia seized in 2014. It would also permit Putin to move more forces to the larger battle for Ukraine's eastern industrial area of the Donbas. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said about 2,000 Ukrainian troops remained at the steel plant. Ukrainian officials said about 1,000 civilians were also trapped there, along with 500 wounded soldiers. Shoigu said the site was blocked off and predicted it could be taken in days. I consider the proposed storming of the industrial area pointless, Putin said. He said he wants to protect the life and health of our soldiers and officers. Putin may be hoping Russian forces can wait for the defenders to surrender after running out of food or ammunition. The attack of the plant could also continue. More than 100,000 people were believed to be trapped with little or no food, water, heat, or medicine in Mariupol. The city had a pre-war population of about 430,000. Chris Perry is a former British high-ranking military official. He told the Associated Press, "The Russian agenda now is not to capture these really difficult places where the Ukrainians can hold out in the urban centers, but to try and capture territory and also to encircle the Ukrainian forces and declare a huge victory." Russian officials have said capturing the Donbas is the war's main goal. Luhansk is one of the two regions that make up the Donbas. The governor there said Russian forces control now 80% of the area. Before Russia invaded, Ukraine controlled 60% of Luhansk. Meanwhile, Western powers are increasing their support of Ukraine, moving to send additional heavy weapons to the country. I'm Dan Novak.
In recent weeks, we have received wonderful messages from our readers and listeners. These messages contain stories of happiness, sadness, and everything in between. One message we received was from Shahjahan. In this week's Everyday Grammar, we will use parts of Shahjahan's message to teach about introductions, closing statements, and how to talk about family and education. Here is part of the message.
Hi there. This is Shahjahan. We are five brothers and three sisters among them. I completed master degree in management in 2002 from National University in Bangladesh. When I was child, I had to face struggle with financially since father was poor, middle-class farmer. My father had been passed away in June 2021. Now I have to bear my full family. Thank you so much to give me this opportunity to tell about my life.
Shah Jahan's introduction says,
Hi there, this is Shah Jahan.
We recommend changing hi there to hello or even hi. Hi there is a friendly way of speaking or writing, but it is informal and generally not used when writing to an unknown person for the first time. In general, we say this is plus name when we are talking on the phone or if we are introducing someone else. Since this is a different situation, we recommend changing this line to My name is Shah Jahan. So the introduction could be,
Hello, my name is Shah Jahan.
Let's listen to a few more lines from Shah Jahan.
We are 5 brothers and 3 sisters among them. I completed master degree in management in 2002 from National University in Bangladesh.
We recommend breaking apart the sentence because it contains several ideas. It describes Shah Jahan's family and also his studies. One way to make this information clearer is to discuss family in one sentence and education in another sentence. The sentence about family could use the structure I have, as in,
I have 4 brothers and 3 sisters.
The next sentence could describe Shah Jahan's education.
In 2002, I received a master's degree in management from National University in Bangladesh.
Shah Jahan then gives a little more information about his childhood.
When I was a child, I had to face struggle with financially since father was poor, middle-class farmer. My father had been passed away in June 2021. Now I have to bear my full family.
We recommend using the simple past verb form in these situations. Faced financial struggles and my father passed away. In the first example, you might use the simple past I faced financial struggles because it was a regular, repeated event in the past. In the second example, you could say my father passed away because it was an event that took place at a single point in time. In addition, we recommend simply using the term poor instead of poor middle class. This is because people usually link financial struggles with the term poor. The final sentence uses the verb bear, but we recommend using the expression take care of. So, Shah Jahan's sentence could be updated to something like this.
When I was a child, I faced financial struggles because my father was a poor farmer. My father passed away in June 2021. Now I take care of my whole family.
Shah Jahan ended his message on a kind note.
Thank you so much to give me this opportunity to tell about my life.
We recommend replacing the word to with for and give with giving. The statement could be this.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to tell about my life.
Now, here is Shah Jahan's message updated with our recommendations.
Hello, my name is Shah Jahan. I have 4 brothers and 3 sisters. In 2002, I received a master's degree in management from National University in Bangladesh. When I was a child, I faced financial struggles because my father was a poor farmer. My father passed away in June 2021. Now I take care of my whole family. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to tell about my life.
We wish Shah Jahan continued success in his English studies and in his career. We hope that all of our readers and listeners gained something from our feedback as well. If you would like your writing to receive feedback or suggestions, write us a short story, 4 to 5 sentences, about your life, your studies, or your interests. We will choose one piece of writing and give detailed suggestions in a future report. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the administration of the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter. It is January 20th, 1977, Inauguration Day. America's newly elected president, Jimmy Carter, is on his way to the White House after his swearing-in ceremony at the Capitol building. But the new president is not riding in a car, he is walking. His wife, Rosalind, and his daughter, Amy, walk with him. Crowds along Pennsylvania Avenue cheer. Bands play. On this cold day in Washington, Americans look to the future. Watergate, the crisis that led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon, is several years in the past. The Vietnam War is history, too. Republican Gerald Ford served the remaining years of Nixon's term. Many people believe he brought respect and order back to the government. Yet he lost the office to Democrat Jimmy Carter in the election of 1976. The nation still has problems. Unemployment is high. So is inflation. But the future of the nation looks bright. Jimmy Carter feels sure about his future, too. On the day before his inauguration, he said,
I do feel that the people of this nation, and I think the entire world, wish me well and want to see me succeed as president. And that gives me a sense of reassurance and confidence. I think I'm ready now to be president.
During the election campaign, Carter often said he would be different from other presidents. He told voters he was not a member of the Washington political establishment, so he would do things in his own independent way. Carter was from Georgia, in the deep south of the United States. There had not been a president born in the South in more than 100 years. Carter studied nuclear engineering and attended the United States Naval Academy. He planned to stay in the Navy. Then his father died, and he decided to return to Georgia to operate the family peanut farm. Carter began his political life on the committee that supervised schools in his hometown of Plains, Georgia. He also served in other local offices. In 1966, he failed to win the Democratic nomination for governor of Georgia. For the next 4 years, he traveled around the state gathering support. He won the next election. As governor, Carter earned praise for reorganizing the state government. He also reformed state programs dealing with prisons and mental health care. In 1972, he offered himself as a candidate for vice president with presidential candidate George McGovern. But the Democratic Party chose someone else. Carter did not wait long to begin his next political move. He would try to win the Democratic presidential nomination in 1976. Jimmy Carter was hardly known outside the state of Georgia. Political experts gave him little chance. Even his mother was surprised to learn that he wanted to be president. President of what, she asked. But the farmer and former governor had a plan. He would try to win his party's primary elections in the South. He believed this would give him enough support at the party convention to win the nomination. Other Democratic candidates tried to stop him, but his plan worked. By the time of the convention, he had enough support to win the nomination on the first ballot. In the general election, Carter defeated President Ford by almost 2% of the popular vote. He lost in the West and Middle West, but won the South and Northeast. President Carter believed strongly in human rights. He hoped he could use his new position to support human rights throughout the world. On this and other issues, he was not afraid of being criticized when he believed he was right. For example, he believed it was right for the United States to end its control of the Panama Canal. He won congressional support for treaties to give control to Panama by the year 2000. He believed it was right to give diplomatic recognition to Communist China. And he believed it was right to continue negotiations with the Soviet Union about limiting nuclear weapons, even though he denounced human rights violations there. In 1979, Carter and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev signed the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, known as SALT II. However, Carter decided not to send the treaty to the Senate for approval after the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan later that year. One of the finest moments of Carter's presidency took place at Camp David. That is the holiday home of American presidents. There, in March 1979, President Anwar Sadat of Egypt met with Prime Minister Menachem Begin of Israel. They signed a peace treaty ending 30 years of war between their countries.
We are privileged to witness tonight a significant achievement in the cause of peace, an achievement none thought possible a year ago or even a month ago, an achievement that reflects the courage and wisdom of these two leaders.
Both men said the treaty would not have been possible without President Carter's help. President Carter was not as successful in dealing with the economy. High unemployment and inflation continued. The federal deficit increased, although he had promised to end it. And there was a shortage of gasoline. The shortage resulted when oil-producing countries limited production and exports. Carter urged American companies to develop new sources of energy in addition to oil. He said the United States needed to do this because it could not always depend on getting enough oil from other countries.
This intolerable dependence on foreign oil threatens our economic independence and the very security of our nation. The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never. From now on, every new addition to our demand for energy will be met from our own production and our own conservation. The generation-long growth in our dependence on foreign oil will be stopped dead in its tracks right now.
During the gasoline shortage, Americans had to wait in long lines to buy fuel. They did not like it and were angry. Many were even more angry about a different situation. Like the gasoline shortage, it was a result of actions in another distant place.
Good evening. The U.S. Embassy in Tehran has been invaded and occupied by Iranian students. The Americans inside have been taken prisoner.
On November 4th, 1979, Muslim extremists in Iran seized the American embassy in Tehran. They took many hostages, including more than 60 Americans. The extremists said they were punishing the United States for being friendly with ousted Iranian leader Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The extremists refused to negotiate. They refused to release the hostages. In early April 1980, President Carter broke off diplomatic relations with Iran. He then ordered American military forces to try to rescue the hostages in Tehran. The operation failed. A sandstorm caused two of the aircraft to crash into each other. They went down in the desert, hundreds of kilometers away. The failed rescue attempt had a major effect on the presidency of Jimmy Carter. Many Americans felt it showed that he could not do the job. Their respect for him continued to decrease as the hostages continued to be held. Other things were beginning to go wrong, too. The president's younger brother, Billy, admitted receiving a large amount of money from Libya. He took the money in exchange for supporting Libyan interests with American lawmakers. His mistake was that he did not list his name as a representative of a foreign government. '80 was a presidential election year in the United States. President Carter was expected to be the candidate of the Democratic Party, but his chances were almost ruined because of the situation in Iran. Carter hoped that concern for the hostages would unite the country behind him. Instead, support turned to blame. Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts believed he could defeat Carter for the nomination. Kennedy won several important Democratic primary elections. But that was not enough. The party renominated Carter. Kennedy offered Carter his support, but not very strongly. This left the party divided. The Republicans got ready to win back the White House. They hoped to do it with a strong appeal to American voters. The appeal came from a man who would become one of America's most popular presidents, Ronald Reagan.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.